From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for October the 1st, 2017. Yes, welcome to October. Time for our weekly look at politics from City Hall to the State House and off to Washington, D.C. Grab the Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week and your month off to a good start. Well, yes, it's October, but hey, postseason baseball soon.
Can't wait.
I know. And it's there's nothing like fall ball, you know. And look at these Cubs. 15, I think they're 15 of eight of the last 18 games.
Nobody wants to play them. Nobody.
Well.
No, if they get in and they got in, nobody wants to face that lineup. Nobody wants to see that team in the playoffs.
It's just fantastic. And, you know, we all kind of wondered what to expect this year. And, you know, we saw how the season kind of dragged on because that first half wasn't very good. But, man, are they hot. And I don't know what to think with the Nationals. I don't know what the Nats are going to bring.
Max Scherzer, one of their aces last night, he was pulled from the start in the fourth inning with a hamstring cramp. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
He's one of their best pitchers.
Right.
He's one of the best pitchers in the league.
Yes, exactly.
So we don't know what his status is. Of course, the Cubs and Nats will play on Friday. That game one will be in Washington, D.C. But if Max Scherzer can't go, that's one less bullet in the gun.
Wow. How is there? I mean, obviously they had a great record this season. But, I mean, lots of bats? Or you know, what's their strength?
Well, they had 811 runs this year. I mean, that's a lot of offense.
Wow.
The Cubs had more runs, believe it or not. But the Nats had some really good starting pitching, too. They've got Steven Strasburg,
right.
Max Scherzer, Gio Gonzalez, Tanner Roark. It's a very balanced club, but it's a club that hasn't won the big game. So that's the advantage for the Cubs on the experience side.
Well, and I tend to think of the Nats like the Capitals in hockey, that they get in, but that's it. Then you don't hear from them again.
They've got muscles in the regular season, but not in the playoffs yet.
Well, I hope that lasts. I hope that lasts. And plus, we've got the Blackhawks season starting finally. I enjoy watching some of the preseason stuff, but I'm ready for hockey to get going.
Thursday night.
Yeah, and a nice tune-up last night at the United Center, 1-0 against the Bruins. And good to see Corey getting a preseason shutout there. That's enthusiastic, you know. Who got the goal last night? Was it Sharp?
Yep, Patrick Sharp.
A power play goal in the third period, midway through the third period, and that was the only goal of the game. But, yeah, it'd be nice to see the power play going this year. That was the special teams, the power play and the penalty kills. They kind of killed us last season, and that'll be great to see all of that kind of going to work this season. And we don't have to worry about the Bears losing today.
It's true.
Think about it.
When's the next game?
Next Monday.
A week from tomorrow.
It could be, Schwani, next Monday, October 9th. It could be Mitch Trubisky time.
That's what you were saying yesterday, yeah.
You think?
It better be. We've seen enough, haven't we?
Now, I had to work late Thursday night, so I did not get to see much of the first half.
You didn't miss anything.
Well, I just wondered, were the Bears playing like a 2-minute drill for a 60-minute game?
They were down 21-0 in the first quarter.
And, well, plus what, Glennon fumbled, right?
Again.
Well, when he's not throwing interceptions, he fumbles.
He leads the league in turnovers.
By himself.
And he came in to manage games. Go figure that one out.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was very frustrating to watch that. And you know, they're playing Green Bay. It's like, can you at least show something here? I mean, we are supposed to be the Bears, but man, just
so. I have to correct myself too. It was 14-0 at the end of the first, 21-0 in the second quarter.
In the second quarter, right?
Yes.
Man, frustrating. Just frustrating. 1-3, is that what we are?
Yep.
Yeah. What did I say for wins this year?
I think you said 6.
Yeah, I did. Oh, what was I thinking? Well, unless we get, you know, at least put Mitch in and let's see what he can do, you know? Time to change things around a little bit. I did see that that ugly hit resulted in a 2-game suspension.
Yeah, Danny Trevathan is going to be bonged 2 games. He is going to appeal. Maybe it gets cut down to 1. But if you saw the hit, whether it was intentional or not, malicious or not, it's a dirty result. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy went to the hospital.
I haven't heard what his condition is.
Checked out of the hospital late Thursday night, but for the first 10 minutes after the hit, he couldn't feel his limbs.
Yeah, it was very disturbing, very disturbing. And, you know, I have no problem with college and the NFL both cracking down on this. I mean, the helmet-to-helmet stuff is just, it's got to stop.
I think the president liked the hit, though.
How do you know?
Just going off what he said in Alabama.
Oh, well, right, yeah. Well, I didn't know if there was some tweet that I had missed.
Not yet, but he did rewarn all the players today to stand during the anthem.
In between tweeting about Puerto Rico, apparently. And then he tweeted out a video of a Blackhawks Blues national anthem at the Scott Trade Center from a couple of years ago, I guess, with 19,000 people standing for national anthem, something like that. So I guess, I don't know, maybe the TV wasn't working out in New Jersey or something, so he was forced to just go on Twitter. He sent 18 tweets yesterday about Puerto Rico, and we'll be talking about that and much more. So much stuff going on in the world of politics and news. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all of the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. On Twitter, at @SymbolSundaySpin. Engineer Bob is getting ready to set up the roadblocks for the Chicago Marathon next weekend, because we all look so forward to that coming down here in the studio. And you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can get our podcasts at iTunes. Just search for my name, Rick Pearson. Coming up, we've got another great show today. After we catch up on the news and sports at 7:30, we'll be speaking to my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. Hal's part of our Tribune political team, and he's really shown his reporting chops lately in covering the Cook County sweetened beverage tax, the pop tax as it's known, and we'll talk to him about the latest on the efforts to repeal that. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll speak to State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, a Chicago Democrat. She was the lead sponsor of what's known as House Bill 40. That's that controversial bill to expand abortion coverage to women on Medicaid and in the state employee health insurance program. And we'll talk to her about Governor Rauner's signature on that bill. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll speak to Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor. She's a Democrat from Lakeview. Her district runs north along the lake and stretches west to Jefferson Park. We'll talk about the pop tax as well as her work on the county's new land bank program. That's all coming up. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. As I said, there's never a dull week in Washington. President Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price is out after revelations of costly taxpayer-funded trips, and there may be other cabinet shakeups to come. And then there was the president, as I was mentioning on Twitter, talking about the response to the hurricane in Puerto Rico, president accusing Puerto Ricans of wanting the federal government to do everything for them, basically accusing them of being lazy, criticizing the San Juan mayor, Carmen Yulín Cruz, over the mainland response to Hurricane Maria. CNN had the mayor on after Elaine Duke, the acting director of Homeland Security, said the relief efforts in Puerto Rico were, in her words, good news. So first I want you to listen to Elaine Duke, and then you'll get San Juan Mayor Ulan's response.
It is really a good news story in terms of our ability to reach people and the limited number of deaths that have taken place in such a devastating hurricane.
And Mayor.
Well, maybe from where she's standing, it's a good news story. When you're drinking from a creek, it's not a good news story. When you don't have food for a baby, it's not a good news story. When you have to pull people down from their buildings, because, you know, that, I'm sorry, but that really upsets me and frustrates me. You know, I would ask her to come down here and visit the towns and then make a statement like that, which, frankly, it is an irresponsible statement, and it contrasts with the statements of support that I have been getting since yesterday when I got that call from the White House. This is not a good news story. This is a people are dying story. This is a life or death story. There's a truckload of stuff that cannot be taken to people's story. This is a story of a devastation that continues to worsen because people are not getting food and water. If I could scream it a lot more louder, it is not a good news story when people are dying, when they don't have dialysis, when their generators aren't working and their oxygen isn't providing for them. Where is there good news here?
That's San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz when she appeared on CNN. Now, in other news, there was the failure of the latest Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare when the GOP couldn't get support for Senator Lindsey Graham's bill. The president and others criticized Senator John McCain of Arizona for not backing the legislation, but Graham appeared on CNN and came to the defense of McCain, his good friend.
He is one of my dearest friends in the world, and John McCain can do whatever damn he wants to. He's earned that right. Now, John has said he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. He's voted in 2015 to repeal Obamacare through the same process. He also says that we want to have a bipartisan solution. The difference between John and myself is I really don't see much space here. And if I thought I did, I would tell you otherwise. But let me tell you about Senator McCain. He's not for Bernie care, Bernie. I know you like the vote he took, but he doesn't want socialized medicine. And I know you do, and I think you believe it's best for America. I believe it's the end of health care as we know it. I believe it's the end of innovation. I think it will bankrupt the country. And the federal government's pretty good at a couple things, like defending the nation. So Senator McCain has talked about a better process. John, if you're listening, if we fall short, we'll try to have a better process. Nobody respects you more than I do. So to any American who's got a problem with John McCain's vote, all I can tell you is that John McCain was willing to die for this country, and he can vote any way he wants to, and it doesn't matter to me in some different way.
That's South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul was another vote against the measure. Paul says Republicans should just repeal Obamacare, not try to fix it.
I wish we would just repeal it. I went to Tea Party rally after Tea Party rally. There's probably no greater opponent of Obamacare than myself. As a physician, I've seen Obamacare up close and personal. It's a terrible system. But we promised to repeal it. We didn't go to Tea Party rallies and shout. I didn't hear anybody chanting, hey, guys, let's keep Obamacare and let's divvy it up to the states and mess with the formula so we take some money from the Democrats and give it to Republicans. We said we'd repeal it. We didn't say we'd keep it and block grant it. So this was not a repeal effort. It was a fake repeal. And what I think we ought to do is keep talking about real repeal. Obamacare is going to get worse.
That's Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul. Also last week, we started to see the first signs of the push by President Trump and Republicans to enact some form of tax reform. Now, details still kind of sketchy on this, but Trump says that simplification is an important element for any plan to proceed.
We must make our tax code simple and fair. It's too complicated. People can't do it. American taxpayers waste 6 billion hours each year complying with the tax code. Under our plan, the vast majority of Americans will be able to file their tax return on a single page without extra record keeping and all of that paperwork. So we're going to make it very, very simple.
That's President Trump talking about the Republicans' plans for tax reform. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan says at least there's an agreed-upon framework for tax reform, and he calls it historic. But again, we still haven't seen all of the details. Here's Speaker Ryan.
We have an historic chance at prosperity in this country. Our Republican leaders in the House, the Senate, and the White House, we've come together on this concrete framework for historic tax reform. We're going to be discussing this with our members tomorrow. I can't tell you how excited this is, because this is not just a big moment for Congress. It's a big moment for Americans. Too many people are struggling in America today. They pay too much in taxes. They feel stuck. They feel anxious. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And we need faster economic growth. And we need a tax code that's built for growth that helps struggling families. People need relief. And we know this. That's why this framework is going to be focused on helping American families. It's going to be focused on helping the people in the middle. It's going to be focused on helping people get to the middle.
That's House Republican Speaker Paul Ryan. Now, the Democratic leader of the Senate, that's New York Senator Chuck Schumer. Schumer said Democrats asked Republicans to consider a few things when it comes to putting together a tax reform package. But Schumer says those requests were basically ignored.
No tax breaks for the 1%. They violated that. Second, don't increase the deficit. They violated that. And third, let's do things in a bipartisan way, which I think every one of the Democrats, 45 plus 3, all agree with on working together. I think they realize, just like with health care, that what they're doing is so out of the mainstream. Their wealthy contributors and donors love it. The hard right loves it. That if they went to reconciliation, they'd have to move the plan somewhat to the middle and somewhat to help the middle class, because that's where Democrats are, and they'd have to forsake their big contributors, Koch brothers, and everybody like that.
That's New York Senator Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. Hal's part of the Tribune's political team. Covers county government. A lot going on in county government, of course, with the controversy over the Cook County sweetened beverage tax. Commissioners to be meeting now in October to consider a potential repeal of that tax, although County Board President Tony Preckwinkle plans to present an outline of the county's budget and questions if there is no tax, where do you come up with $200 million to fill the hole that tax being taken away would cause. So that's coming up.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning and welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me this morning, actually a good friend of mine, Tony Britos. Tony,
good
thank
morning.
You so much.
Good morning.
I've been looking for a way to talk about Cafe Bianda, which is one of my favorite places in the South Loop neighborhood. And God bless Tony. He is general manager of Cafe Bianda. He actually started now a Sunday brunch. So it's a great opportunity, a great chance to see the food, the menu. It's one like a hidden gem of that we're trying not to keep
it,
hidden
it
anymore.
It truly is a gem. It truly is a gem, and I found it, and very happy I'm there. What a wonderful true Chicago restaurant. I mean, it truly is, and. You know, when we started this brunch here, we figured we'd take on the fact of giving back to the community is what we wanted to do, because we have such a wonderful local following and the local hotels and the people in the city of Chicago. And we decided that, you know, brunch is a good way to go, but we wanted to give the ultimate quality and the ultimate value. And that's the reason why we started the brunch, you know, to give back. So
and you brought some brunch for us this morning. What do we have this morning?
We did. Well, we brought a few things, and when we created the brunch menu, it was more or less breakfast, brunch, lunch combined with the things that are happening in the city, which the Bears season is happening right now. So we took it off on the Bears, and so we offer, you know, Italian eggs Benedict. We do French toast that is just stellar. Chef Manny did a wonderful job with that. We also have a Italian hash is what we did. We also do buffalo wings and also our own recipes for the barbecue wings, which are out of this world. They're sticky, they're delicious, and they're messy. And
kind of like watching the Bears.
It is kind of like watching the Bears. And the unique thing is that you can get this menu all day long, and featuring the full baby back ribs, which you get a full baby back ribs. And, you know, like I said, for $15 for a full rack of ribs, you can't go wrong.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
We did. We created our own drinks. Like today, I'm going to make our fresh Bloody Marys. The recipe is from 1965. Actually, when I used to work with Nick's Fish Market back in the day for 17 years. And he started the Red Vest, and we called the Bloody Mary the Vest. And that was his first restaurant. So pretty proud of that. Also, Chef Manny also made limoncello, you know, fresh limoncello, and as well, we did a tribute to Harry's bar in Venice, Italy, and we made frosted peach Bellinis, and we called it the Bionda Bellini. They're just phenomenal. It really is.
Oh, doesn't that get your Sunday off to a wonderful start? And, of course, great things happening in the South Loop. So, you know, just a few block walk from the new Wintrust Arena down there. And from McCormick Place. But, you know, this has been an anchor point for, really, I think, in the South Loop.
Yes, indeed. When I was introduced to Cafe Bionda years ago, probably in 2007 when I was with Gibson's Restaurant Group, and ownership took us there for a dinner, which was all the operations managers and general managers in the company. We sat on this long table, and the food is phenomenal, the service, and, you know, I got to tell you, you know, my most proud moment is actually walking into that restaurant and working with the staff, because the staff, they make it, and they are just phenomenal. They've been there, and the locals know them, the people know them, and I have never seen so many call parties for certain individuals as our staff, and that is all the staff. So what a beautiful thing.
And so, you know, with the Bears season, Cafe Bionda, they've got a shuttle van that runs to and from the game with the pickup and drop off at 18th Street. And Cafe Bionda is at 1924 South State Street. You can get a look at the menu. You can go to their website at cafebionda.com. You can also go to facebook.com/cafebionda as well. Instagram, too, at Cafe Bionda,
yes.
Getting very heavily involved in social media.
Well, yes, indeed. And I tell you, the most unique thing that we have that nobody in the city of Chicago has is we're proud to feature our 1946 Cadillac limousine. It's actually parked right outside, and we pick up, requests for people that come into the city that want to do something special, and also our shuttle van that seats 12. And we go back and forth to the hotels and to the games, and free drop-off and pick-up on Sundays for the Bears games when they're in town.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. You can actually also call Cafe Bionda, too, for more information at 312-326-9800. And people are actually taking pictures of the caddy outside. I mean, it is, you're really classing up the place today.
It is a hit. We're very proud of it. And nice to be in Chicago. And we look forward to seeing everybody at Cafe Bionda.
Thank you so much, Tony. We appreciate it.
Great pleasure.
Now we're going to talk to my good friend, Hal Dardick. Hal is the colleague of mine who's a Tribune reporter, part of the Tribune's political team, and he has been all over this issue of covering the Cook County sweetened beverage tax. Hal, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, glad to be here, Rick.
Sorry you can't be here for the great breakfast that we're going to be having here.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking to Tony there, I'm thinking, boy, I made a mistake.
I warned you. I warned you. So, Hal, you know, here we are. We're now in October. We know that the county commissioners are some of them are looking at considering a repeal vote on the sweetened beverage tax. The lobbying is going on fast and furious. The spending is going on fast and furious. Where do things stand right now?
On October 10th, so next week, there will be a finance committee meeting to consider a repeal vote. Last time this was voted on, last November, there was a tie vote with one commissioner absent, an 8-8 tie. Tony Preckwinkle, the county board president, broke that tie. So if all commissioners were to stand, and that's by no means certain because of all the lobbying that's gone on and the backlash over the tax, there would depend on Commissioner Dennis Deere. A new commissioner has been appointed since that vote, and his predecessor was ill and not able to attend that meeting, who expressed support for the vote when he initially was appointed a couple months ago, but is now saying that he's undecided on the matter. But that is just one of the commissioners that could be a swing vote on this issue. There are a number of others who now say they're undecided who supported it in the past. So it takes 9 votes to pass a repeal, but it takes 11 votes to override a veto if President Preckwinkle were to veto that. So it really takes 11 votes.
Yeah, that's really the key number, I think, because people are, you know, looking at that first step, but it's really a two-step process here.
Right, right. Assuming she vetoes it, but she's been very strong in her continued support of the pop tax despite the backlash. So one assumes she would do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the lobbying that's been going on this. I mean, you know, obviously you can't turn on the TV without seeing the ads being run on both sides.
Sure, turn on the TV, listen to the radio. If you're a voter in Cook County in some of these swing districts, you've probably been bombarded with mailers from both sides. The amount of money being spent, I've been covering politics now for 32 years. I've rarely seen anything like it. Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, a very wealthy media owner, has spent more than $10 million so far.
That's just him.
That's just him.
Right.
On commercials to promote this as a public health benefit. And the Can the Tax Coalition has spent $3.2 million on commercials. They've also, like Michael Bloomberg, done many mailers. They also have a little operation going on where they're paying folks to go out and knock on doors and get people to sign petitions opposed to the tax. There's all kinds of money being spent. And this is not unique to Cook County. It's happened in other areas of the country where they've passed a soda tax or a pop tax, whatever your preference. it's actually a sweetened beverage tax, I think we should remind people. It's on every drink that you get that has added sugar or an artificial sweetener in it, which has irked many people who say, why is the diet stuff being taxed? But so in California, in Oakland and San Francisco, there were a couple of referendums that passed, but tens of millions of dollars was spent out there on advertising. But this could end up in some ways in Cook County being ground zero. It's the largest jurisdiction in the country where a pop tax has been passed. And so I think the beverage industry combined with the local retailers feel like, well, if they can defeat it here or if they can even going into elections next year, defeat some commissioners who support it. Even if they can't defeat it, they can send a message around the country and try to halt what they see from their side is unfair and bad public policy.
We're speaking with Hal Dardick. He's my colleague on the Tribune's political team, who's been extensively covering the issue of that controversial Cook County sweetened beverage tax. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Don't mind any of the background noise. We're just operating out of the Cafe Beyond a kitchen this morning. I appreciate, again, my good friends at Cafe Beyond for bringing us brunch this morning. We're speaking to my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick, and we're talking about the Cook County sweetened beverage tax and the fate of that. And, Hal, you kind of touched on the fact that, yeah, we're seeing the intensive lobbying, intensive public pressure leading up to whatever happens on the October 10th vote, but there's also this longer lasting effect too, and to that end is, you know, the involvement in political campaigns. And actually we've got a call from our good friend Ron. As always, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah, good morning, Rick. Hal, great article yesterday. And as they say, Rick, I guess in the business of full disclosure, I am a volunteer against the taxes, and Hal, I spent a lot of time at that office that you wrote about.
You could have brought Hal in then. You could have helped him out.
Yeah, I wish I'd found him.
Yeah. Three quick questions. I'll make it quick. I believe that it will be repealed, but I think that Craig Winkle can't veto it, so I want you to talk about that and how the veto can be overridden. Secondly, do you expect any opposition now that Boykin has decided that he will not run against her? Are you expecting any opposition? And then talking about political ramifications, something you don't hear too much about, Chuy Garcia, he hasn't mentioned anything about running for mayor, but I think there could be some consequences for him regarding his vote. So thanks again. Again, excellent article. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you, Ron. Hal, there you go. The tee's been set for you.
Yeah, there you go. I think, you know, 11 votes is a pretty tall order. I don't think it's impossible. I'm loathe to predict. I think I'm one of those guys who thought Donald Trump couldn't win the presidency, you know, and said that once. But it's tough, though, because there's going to be a lot of lobbying on both sides. And Tony is going to push the idea that you got to fill this $200 million hole. And there's a lot of money lining up on both sides. Michael Bloomberg said, well, I'm going to support anyone with whatever it takes, and he's certainly got a lot of money, to support people who back the tax, and the other side is setting up PACs to support them. So it's hard to predict which way it will go. In terms of Chuy Garcia, if he does have future mayoral ambitions, this is certainly something that he has to think about. Because it is, I think, beyond the push from the beverage industry, something that is certainly extremely unpopular. So, in terms of challenging Tony Preckwinkle, I think that we may yet see someone pop up, but right now there's no certain candidate to challenge her, with Richard Boykin saying he won't enter the race.
And, you know, there had been a lot of speculation about Boykin, and he had, you know, made it well known the fact that he was exploring a potential challenge to her. And there are, you know, there are a lot of people who do see her as being very vulnerable on this tax issue.
Oh, certainly she is. There's a couple of things. Of course, she ran the first time in 2010, pledging to eliminate what remained of the unpopular penny on the dollar sales tax that her predecessor Todd Stroger had passed, and she did that. But then she reinstated it to start bringing fiscal health back to the county worker pension system, and so that was seen. She did that right after her last reelection. as a risky move. And now there's this pop tax, which is even far more unpopular. We haven't seen this kind of backlash in anything, ironically, at the county since 2009 when Todd Strozier got the sales tax increase passed. So the view is there is a lot of vulnerability, but she is a formidable candidate nonetheless. She's vice chairman of the Democratic Party. She's got a lot of supporters in the unions. It would be difficult to take her on. Boykin said he didn't want to create World War III. There's a couple of things going on there. One is, yeah, there'd be a lot of money thrown at it. The other, and it would be an intense battle. The other is that I think they were afraid about splitting up the Democratic Party, dividing it, particularly in the black community, like after the death of Harold Washington.
Well, and we also, and we actually wrote about this, you know, back in August during slating about, you know, some of the concerns among Democrats about, you know, kind of getting tarnished by negative reaction to this tax, but not just the people on the county board, but, you know, aldermen, some even state legislators are concerned about just this unpopularity and whether that will extend to other Democrats on the ballot next year.
Right. Yeah, I talked to aldermen as part of my duties of covering the city council, and they say we're getting calls in our ward offices telling them, why did you pass this pop tax? Well, they didn't, of course, but they're feeling the heat on that, and it's combined with record city property taxes. And, of course, the 32% increase in the state income tax that the state legislature passed. Interestingly, there are some Democrats who are in tough, what are expected to be tough reelection contests next year, who are backing a state law that would take the tax away from Cook County, which is sort of an interesting tactic. Of course, this tax has gotten the most attention and come to represent the tax fatigue that people feel, but at the same time, the legislators are battling a tax that probably, for the vast majority of people, doesn't affect them nearly as much as the income tax increase. So it's a way to rally against taxes even after you passed one on your own.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting too to see if Springfield in reality will weigh in, particularly with House Speaker Michael Madigan, and while obviously his interests are in protecting his Democratic majority in the Illinois House, at the same time, there is that trepidation of that occurs of not wanting to step into someone else's political issues.
There's certainly been sort of a parlor game about what will Mike Madigan do, of course. He's so far been an ally of Tony Preckwinkle, but he's been personally mum on this issue, but those candidates certainly aren't going out there and talking about repeal without his sort of tacit approval. And one of the commissioners, Edward Moody, in the south suburbs, is a strong Madigan ally, longtime ally, and people are thinking his vote may be one of the swing votes because he was appointed since the last election and is, along with Dennis Deer, is considered one of the folks that could have a more a difficult election coming up next year. So there's a sort of a complex weave of what's going on here. Of course, with Mike Madigan, as you know very well, and your listeners probably know very well, it's a chess game. We won't know what he's really planning until he pulls the trigger or makes that last move, I should say.
It's always that way. Hal Dardick, my good friend and colleague on the Tribune's political team, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, it was my pleasure, as always.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz of Chicago. We'll be talking about her sponsorship of that controversial bill that Governor Rauner signed last week that would expand taxpayer-subsidized abortions to women who are covered under Medicaid as well as women in the state employee health insurance program. That's coming up.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to your second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And once again, want to give a very special thank you to our friends at Cafe Beyond at 1924 South State Street in Chicago. They're here setting up it's their Bears tailgate brunch, but actually it's a good day to have the brunch because you don't have to watch the Bears while you're eating. That way, you know, if you can't stomach the way they've been playing lately, please give their brunch a try. And you can find them at facebook.com/CafeBeyonda, also on Instagram at CafeBeyonda, 312-326-9800, and they're located at 1924 South State Street in Chicago. Joining me now on the phone is State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, a Democrat from the city of Chicago. And Representative Feigenholz is the sponsor of what's known as HB 40, and that's the legislation that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner signed into law on Thursday that would expand taxpayer-subsidized abortions to women who have health care coverage in Medicaid and women who are in state employee health insurance program. Representative Feigenholz, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, Rick, good morning. Thank you for having me.
And sorry you couldn't make it down here for breakfast this morning.
Yeah, I hear it's quite an extravaganza.
Yes, it is.
I fasted yesterday, so.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, before we start talking about the bill, I wanted to play a little soundbite from Governor Rauner's press conference announcing his decision on this bill. This is Governor Rauner explaining his signature on this.
I am being true to my values and my views. I have always been true to those. In my discussions with the General Assembly and others in the spring, I proposed what I hoped would be a compromise that both sides could agree to. Neither side would agree. I have to make a decision. I have to do what I believe is right for people of Illinois. And I have to be consistent with my values, and that's what I've done.
That's Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and making his decision on House Bill 40. Representative Feigenholz, a lot of pressure on him, a lot of pressure on both sides. And now he finds himself in a very, awkward position, particularly among his Republican members. But certainly, even though the bill passed in May, there's been a lot of public pressure on him.
Well, there has. And, we could extrapolate and go back and rewrite how we think it should have been done based on the governor's candidate questionnaire, which you and I talked about a few months ago on your show, where he said that he supported the pillars of what was in HB 40. And so his comments in April kind of caught us off guard because we believe that he ran as a pro-choice governor. When we sponsored this bill, I know personally, I probably would have hesitated thinking if he would have done something other than that. So I think he, in my estimation, his error was not sticking to his convictions in the first place and his flip-flop in April.
Let's point out, in April is when he announced that he was going to veto this bill.
Correct. I think that that's, if had he stuck to his convictions, told his caucus that who he typically sees his values align with on this particular issue, I mean, everybody knew he ran as a pro-choice governor in 2014, including all of his Republican partisans who are attacking him now. So I'm not sure if I were to rewrite the story, Rick, I would have, I would have discouraged him from doing what he did in April.
Well, when he talks about how he tried to broker a compromise, which he says would have been the rewriting the bill to allow the trigger quote to stay in, and that would have been, there's also a part of this bill that supporters say is necessary in case the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, which is a concern among many supporters of abortion rights because of the Trump administration, that he would sign that part, but put off the issue of the expanded subsidies, taxpayer-subsidized abortion for Medicaid and state employee health insurance. He would put that off until later. He says that's the compromise he tried to broker, and neither side went for it. Indeed, did that really occur? Because he had talked about doing that, but did it actually get as far as trying to solicit support for it?
Well, he called me.
Okay.
And he asked me, and I told him I was not going to leave poor women in the dust, and that this is an issue of economic justice, and that abortion is not just a protected right for wealthy women. And this has been, abortion has been stigmatized. It's the irony, Rick, that I think you'll enjoy is that September 30th is the 41st anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Of the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment passed September 30th. So the eve of him signing this bill would, and Illinois, of course, should be proud that the state where Congressman Henry Hyde represented this state and passed the Hyde Amendment, that this is also the state that saw fit to undo it because of the fact that this is an issue of economic justice, and that we need to protect all women, not just women who can afford abortions.
So when you see the really harsh criticism coming from the Republican ranks towards the governor, let's face it, he made pledges on both sides, and that seems to have severe political ramifications down the road, not just necessarily among Republicans.
Well, I think his announcement in April was about the passionate feelings about the issue on both sides, as opposed to his original and personal feelings about the issue. And I think he clarified that a few days ago when he said that this isn't supposed to be, we can't punish poor women in good conscience. Now, when I did speak to him on the phone, I reminded him of the three previous Republican governors who all were in this same situation around the issue of Medicaid funding of abortion, beginning with Jim Thompson in 1975, who wrote one of the most sensitive, eloquent amendatory vetoes in support of poor women receiving Medicaid funding of abortion, as you recall, which really took a lot of courage if you think about it.
Yes, back then. And then I noted in my story in today's Tribune about George Ryan, who basically had become a running mate of Jim Thompson's as kind of the conservative counterbalance. And when Jim Thompson was governor and George Ryan was lieutenant governor, when George Ryan was governor, he was an opponent of the Equal Rights Amendment. He was opposed to abortion rights, and yet he vetoed legislation that was passed that would have restricted Medicaid coverage of abortion.
Well, I think that all three, and to his credit, I have to say that after April, the governor was approached relentlessly. There were protests, there were rallies, a lot of very angry people who supported him because they thought he was pro-choice felt that they were betrayed. And he met with a lot of them and heard some firsthand stories of women who had to make some very, very tough decisions when they needed to obtain abortion care because of their financial situation, and that they proved to him that they deserve access to the same constitutionally protected reproductive health care that any woman does, and that simply by virtue of the fact that they're a state employee or a person insured on the state's Medicaid plan shouldn't be a limitation to them and wielded as a weapon to punish them. So I think he made the right decision. It was bold. The route was circuitous, but I think he got the message from women in the state of Illinois that we expect him to live up to his promise for Illinois women. I mean, if you see the reason we did this and the reason we even added the trigger language into the legislation is because of the constant threats and the haphazard information coming out of Washington from President Trump about him wanting to appoint an anti-choice Supreme Court and his threats around overturning Roe v. Wade. This became a very, very serious issue that our law in 1975, the Illinois Abortion Act, was written by anti-choice legislators to continue to impair access inch by inch, directly and indirectly, veiled attempts to make it look like they're trying to keep women safe when they're really pushing them into back alley abortions and into more dangerous situations. So as a state lawmaker, I felt that I had a responsibility, along with my pro-choice colleagues, to do all we could to protect Illinois women, no matter what happened in Washington, no matter what Donald Trump did, and keep this state a place where abortion is safe, legal, and accessible. That was within our reach, and that is what House Bill 40 does. That is now what this law does. It keeps women safe no matter what happens in Washington, D.C.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz from Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower. Joining me on the phone is Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, and we're talking about the governor's signature on her bill, which would expand abortion health care coverage to women under Medicaid and also the state employee health insurance program. Representative, in talking to some folks in Springfield with the fall veto session scheduled to get underway later this month, there's already warnings that the governor now, because of the backlash that he's facing on the Republican side, that this could be a very interesting veto session, and that quite frankly the Democrats in the majority in the House may try to use this to this kind of divide between the governor and Republican lawmakers, exploit the divide and push for a number of veto overrides that perhaps normally wouldn't be overridden.
Well, you know, that remains to be seen. I think that there's more than just the governor that legislators have to answer to. They also have to answer to their constituents. And there's a long time between now and when we go back for veto session. I frankly, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm sure that this was a very, very divisive issue. And I'm sure that there will be ramifications on all sides. I just know one thing, that we protected women in this state, and everyone should be proud of that. We should stop stigmatizing women around abortion care in this state and in this country. I'm hoping that cooler heads will prevail and that this issue will just be done and off the table.
A
girl can dream.
I was just going to say, you know, but I do think it's going to be a very interesting veto session, just because of really the strong reaction that this has received. I mean, you've got the House Republican floor leader basically calling Rauner a lame duck and saying Republicans should coalesce around a potential primary challenger. It's almost gone beyond the issue of, you know, abortion itself into a full-fledged political battle.
Exactly. Well, and let's see how that develops. You know, I'm sure that, you know, we will see shortly. It's no small tax task, as you know, to gather signatures and to get on the ballot. The state faces some serious crisis that we, and I'm sure the public is kind of tired of all this bickering, and we look like gladiators. You know, we want to do our jobs. We want to balance the budget. We want to have good education, safe schools, safe cities, and now, you know, this is being stirred up. So it is going to be very interesting, and it is going to be a very, very tough political season for a lot of people. But in the end, I think the governor did the right thing, and I'm happy that Illinois has started. We're a state that hasn't addressed an issue on abortion as big as this in maybe 20 or more years. And I think that that says something. The fact that it was a bill that was predominantly voted on by only Democrats, not one pro-choice Republican in the state of Illinois, and a Republican governor signing it, is going to be part of history. Hopefully people will remember the good things we did for women instead of the partisan rancor.
I also wanted to, just in the couple of minutes we have left, I wanted to mention about this bill that you had that was signed into law a few weeks ago about food allergy training at restaurants in Illinois. You know, it just seems that now that's almost kind of it seemed like an unusual issue, you know, years ago. And now it's almost like before you get invited to something, they ask whether you have any food allergies.
I think this was a piece of legislation that came from restaurateurs who had experienced some adverse situations in their environment and really wanted to step up and do some separate training around allergy training. I worked with a coalition, FAIR, which is a group of people who suffer through food allergies. It's a national group. I learned a lot, and I took a lot of online tests to see the differences between an extensive allergy training versus just food handling, and it is significant. And I'm hoping that, as you know, Rick, we are a culinary destination, and in the food industry and in the restaurant world, if something happens in a restaurant, God forbid, and someone has a terrible reaction, people don't come back, you know. And so a little bit of training with a person who is on premises will go a long way to avoid all this. And as you know, we can't walk into a restaurant without the first thing when I sit down, I don't know about you, the waitstaff looks at me and says, any allergies at this table? Peanuts,
right.
Anybody allergic to anything? And I think that that's good. I really do. To make this experience safer, and it is, again, self-directed by the owners and the establishment themselves.
Sarah Feigenholtz, Democratic State Representative from Chicago, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and once again want to thank my good friends over at Cafe Bionda, 1924 South State Street in Chicago, who are providing us with our Bears tailgate brunch this morning. And thankfully, we don't have the Bears to watch, so we can stomach our brunch this morning.
But Jay Cutler's on TV right now.
That's why everybody's listening to the Sunday Spin. There's no reason to be watching Jay Cutler. Has he been intercepted yet?
No, first play, he just handed it off. No interceptions yet. I will keep you posted throughout the morning.
Well, don't interrupt with interceptions, because that could happen every 10 seconds or so.
Back to my sports hole.
Yeah, please. But thanks again to Cafe Bionda. You can call them at 312-326-9800. They're also at cafebionda.com. Facebook.com/CafeBionda and Instagram at Cafe Bionda. They've just started this Sunday brunch. The menu was wonderful. French toast, Bionda frittata, the Italian sausage hash, filet mignon sliders, all kinds of good things. And you know, if the Bears are the Bears, at least then you might as well enjoy a good meal. So thanks again to Tony and everybody from Cafe Beyond. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, a Democrat representing the north side of Chicago. And Commissioner, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Of course.
Morning.
Thanks. Good morning.
So you're an opponent to the pop tax.
I am.
I assume you plan to stay an opponent to the
pop tax. I do.
I don't, I've been around a long time, longer. We don't want to talk about that. But I don't know that I've ever seen a tax that has had such a visceral reaction before.
I agree. And, I mean, God knows I haven't been around as long as you.
But good, you saved yourself on that one.
Having been around a little bit. I think it's a couple things. I think that you first of all, it's in your face every time you buy something, and it's something that people buy a lot because it isn't just pop. You know, a lot of people don't drink pop, but they have even low sugar orange juice. They have diet sodas. They have other things, tea, all that stuff. So you get confronted with it every single time. So two or three times a week, you're reminded because they have this separate tab on it. But it also really increases the cost of what you're buying. So if you buy a case of pop, it can add several dollars onto the case of pop, and the case of pop isn't as, you know, that much more expensive than that. So it kind of it's very present to people, but I actually think it's more than that. I think there's a couple things. You know, you had an income tax at the state, you had a property tax at the city, and you had a sales tax at the county. And so for me, who represents, you know, the north side and the northwest side, you have a lot of people who own their own business, they own the building, they're paying all of that stuff, and it feels like a lot. And it also feels like a lot at a time when, that we're also still struggling fiscally. It's not like we had all these taxes and then solved the pension crisis, or had all these taxes in the states in great, you know, AA credit rating condition.
Right.
So the idea is we're passing all these taxes, we're still broke, and yet here's something else that's just like a stone in my shoe that reminds me every single time. So I think that's part of the reason it's been such a backlash.
Would a property tax have been, I mean, not that property taxes are ever palatable,
right,
but a property tax increase of that nature or something else rather than this?
I think what people are looking for is a combination. Generally speaking, when you really talk to people, it's not so much that they don't want to support the cost of government. It's just that they want to see a balance. They want to see some cuts and then they can see some revenue. But when it's just revenue and not cuts, it makes them crazy because like it's only one, everyone's sitting on the same side of the table.
And no offense, but, you know, county government doesn't do a good job of explaining what it does.
Well, it only serves, look, it acts as the safety net in a lot of ways. It's the jail. It's the public health system. It's the court system. So you could live your whole life here and avoid most of those things. I mean, we all benefit. You have to have a criminal justice system. You have to have a court system or we wouldn't have a safe society. But people don't touch it and feel it. It's not like the park district or the police department or streets where people see it every day and they see how they benefit.
Now, we have President Preckwinkle is preparing her to put out the budget.
Yeah.
As another reason.
Right, this week.
As another reason kind of why the tax should not be repealed. Is there an obligation on others to come up with where's the $200 million in revenue come from?
Of course there is. This is a joint effort. You know, I mean, just like city council, it's a give and take. Everyone has to contribute. I think there's a couple of things. The budget comes out and there's two things to consider. One, the $200 million number is a projection. But when you look at places where the pop tax has been implemented, the projections fall short of the reality because I can't imagine you haven't heard people that say, I'm driving to Will County to get my pop. I'm getting it when I'm coming back from Indiana. This is something that people have the choice to pay. So this isn't like property tax or it isn't like other things where you're kind of stuck.
Right.
So the $200 million, when you look at Philadelphia, their actual collections are about 30% lower than their projections. So I think, you know, this idea that we're going to hit $200 million has to be challenged. And then the second part is, where are there ways at the county where we can reduce costs? And that is absolutely people's responsibility.
And I think that's what people are asking. I mean, the public is kind of asking is, you know, you're telling us there aren't any places to cut.
There are. And so, you know, a couple of things that have happened at the county over the last couple of years that I have not been in support of and I think we can reverse is the move towards outsourcing to large contracts to have outside people manage functions at the county that are in some ways very day-to-day. We entered into an almost $50 million contract with a private company. We borrowed money, and then we are paying contractors to pay prevailing wage plus a bump up to the contractor to change the light bulbs for energy efficient light bulbs. And those are core functions of what the county does every day. And so when you look at, you know, seasonal workers, we end up hiring a private company to come in, again, contractor bonus, prevailing wage, to come in and do seasonal jobs where you could hire, just like they do at the city, in streets when there's more work in the summer, using our own employees. And, you know, there's some things that that government does all the time, and we're kind of in that business. There are niche things that, you know, that can be outsourced. But at the end of the day, you can't get away from doing your day-to-day, and you end up paying a premium for it. And those are the things that we have to get away from because they're too expensive.
You kind of touched on the compounding of should Democrats be concerned? I talked about this with Hal, and I remember going over to Slating, and there were real concerns of about the Democrats.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually, Chris Kennedy mentioned that if people think that this is going to be some kind of Democratic wave year automatically because of people that have concerns about Donald Trump, you might want to think again because of the fact of, you know, these various levies that have been put on.
That's absolutely the case. I mean, the cover of Time magazine is an NFL player kind of tackling one of those balloon things that's never topple over of Donald Trump, you know. And look, the guy has gone through more mishaps in 6 or 8 months than you could imagine in an entire presidency. And guess what? It doesn't stick. There are things that people aren't, you know, there is a big resistance, but it's not as if the whole country is going to change its mind. And I think the combination of taxes that people see, the fact that they don't feel like we have our fiscal house in order, and, you know, the idea that, you know, Trump is not going to lead a great resistance. People may not like him, but the Democrats can't rely on that. This is about organizing at the grassroots level. And one of the things that the Democratic Party has done less of a good job in the last generation is really doing that local office piece, because, you know, we get kind of charmed and romanced by a really charismatic president, and we kind of expect that momentum to inspire everyone and elect a Democratic politician. But just because you have a Democratic president doesn't mean that on the ground you have Democratic policies and practices. I mean, you know, you were talking earlier on the show about abortion. You know, I mean, look, abortion's legal federally, but you could drive 2 days in the middle of this country and not find someone to provide one. Right to work laws, you know, you got labor laws enshrined at the federal government, and we're, you know, the only state that's not a right to work state in the entire industrial Midwest. So we've got to do a much better job of communicating what we're all about, but doing it at really hitting the shoe leather.
And actually proving up.
Yes. Yeah.
Not just talking, but proving up.
Well, that's always the way. Yeah.
Well, I know, but I mean,
yeah, exactly.
But I think there seems to be among the electorate, maybe that was part of this Trump factor of people wanting results.
I think also they want to know where people stand, even if they don't like it. They want to feel like someone's not selling them a load of goods. And, you know, look, I'm not defending Trump by any far stretch of the imagination, but, you know, there's this idea that people at least feel like they know what he's doing. Now, a lot of that's changed in the 9 months of him being president, but I think they're looking for some solid ground.
And, of course, there's always Twitter as well.
There's always Twitter. I had a really funny story. Doris Kearns Goodwin, who wrote, you know, the historian, sure, writes about baseball. She talked when she wrote Team of Rivals that Lincoln had this practice where if he got really mad at somebody, he would have this thing called a hot letter where he'd write everything he was mad, like if general did something in the war. But he realized that if he said it, it might kind of undermine their confidence. So he would put it away for a couple days and then go back to it later and see if he wanted to say all that stuff.
If he still felt that way, yes.
So she said that President Trump should have a hot Twitter, that it just goes off into ether, and then later he can come back and do it. So, you know.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, no, you never know.
We're speaking with Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and joining me here in studio is Bridget Gaynor, Cook County Commissioner, Democrat representing the north and northwest sides of the city. I want to talk to you about the land bank mm-hmm. program, the county's land bank program, which is kind of a very novel homeowners program, because the land banking before was always developers.
Yes, yes. So we started the land bank in 2013, and it really came as a result from the foreclosure crisis. You know, houses all over the city in really good neighborhoods, Chatham, Auburn, Gresham, Belmont, Cragen, were stuck in the court system. So they were vacant for years. And so first our thought was, okay, how do we get them unstuck from the court system? Because I had people all the time say, this house is across the street from me. I want to buy it. It's next door to my mother. I can't even figure out who owns it. So we did that part. Then they'd often be burdened by tons of back taxes. And if you don't clear that out, it's going to sit vacant. Now, right. You know, we've got hundreds of homes that are back on the tax rolls. But then the next thing we realize is there's a bunch of homes that require a good amount of rehab, $40,000, $50,000. It's not really enough for a developer, but it's almost sometimes too much for a homeowner. So how do we figure out a way? So we work with banks, came up with a new mortgage product that they can use, because banks often don't want to lend when the house really needs some significant repairs. And the land bank has two big focuses. One is we're focused on home ownership. You know, there's been a huge spike in single family home rental in this country in the last 5 to 10 years. And I just feel like it's just one more way to undermine the stability, financial stability of the middle class. Defined benefit pensions, your home, those were your investments for retirement. And if you undermine those, then people have, you know, they have no generational wealth, especially in communities that were redlined or were hit harder by foreclosure. And a lot of those were Black and Latino communities. So we looked at this focus as to say, we're going to push to homeownership. We're not going to sell to developers who only want to go for rental or only have a Section 8 strategy. So now we've done hundreds of homes, and 75% of them have gone to homeowners, and in all the same neighborhoods across Chicago, mostly South and West Sides. And this new program now gives you this opportunity, especially if a house has been vacant for a year or two, it needs some substantial work. And this is a way to connect to small developers and get them busy. You know, most of our developers are from the community. So we have about 150 developers, the majority of whom African-American, Latino, small, because we eliminate the obstacles. It's not about giving someone a grant. It's about making it, you know, getting rid of the things that get in their way for them to have their own business.
How do people get more information about
this? So if you go to cookcountylandbank.org, so cookcountylandbank.org, all one word, all the houses we have for sale are right up there. And actually with this home buyer direct program, as we're calling it, we're actually raffling a home, a fully rehabbed home in Auburn Gresham that's going to be done right before Thanksgiving. And so if you go on the website, you can register for the raffle, lottery, whatever you want to call it, for this program. And we're using that as an opportunity to really, you know, take
a demonstration.
A demonstration, because a lot of people are paying more in rent than they would in a mortgage, but they don't know how to take the next step. And home ownership is the key to neighborhood stability in my mind. And I think we have a huge opportunity to get people out of expensive rentals and into homes where they're actually building their own wealth and retirement security.
Well, and in a kind of a related thing, in talking with Republicans, talking about their tax reform at the national level, and the issue of things like taking out state and local tax deductibility, I think there is a significant impact there if were that to occur on home ownership in Illinois and property tax states.
I think that, well, there's two issues. One is they want to eliminate the mortgage interest deduction. And I want to say, I think we have a better chance of seeing God than we have at that happening, because everybody gets a mortgage,
right,
Republican or Democrat. The second is this whole, like you said, if we're in a high property tax and high income tax states, like most Democratic states are, New York, Illinois, California, and you eliminate that deduction off your federal taxes, it's definitely a hit on what blue states or whatever you want to call them. That'll have an impact. But hopefully it won't impact home ownership, because they'll still, I truly believe, we'll always maintain this mortgage interest deduction. It's too popular and it's too widespread.
I also want to ask you about off the sidelines.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a nonpartisan platform.
So,
and it's women engagement.
Yeah. Well, look, a couple years ago, I've just found myself in this conversation over and over again about women who said, God, there's so much I want to change. I want to get involved and I don't know what to pick because there's so many choices. And I think especially when you're raising kids or your parents are getting older, you're really pressed and you're working, you know, your time is really valuable. How do you choose that thing? So I had met Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She launched this thing Off the Sidelines, and it's, you know, there's a lot of focus on women running for office, which is great, and I'm a huge supporter. Having said that, most women are never going to run for office. So the whole goal is just get active. And we started a Chicago chapter, and it's been amazing. So in 2 years, we have now over 2,000 people involved. We pick one issue, talk about it. This is what's really interesting. And then we get a lunch. We have a lunch at the end of the month where people come together. And at one of them, I was invited out to a couple of high schools, you know, right around the issues of Laquan McDonald, and two high schools on the south side, and then Whitney Young, and met this group of amazing young women. So at 16 and 17, way more plugged in to the rest of the world. I mean, I was like,
isn't that a shock when
right.
you
I was thinking, like, what am I doing on Saturday? And, you know, I'm going to stand around at Monroe Park. I mean, that was about like the extent probably of my deep thoughts. But these girls were really thinking. And one of the most poignant comments I got was, it was a bunch of girls at Lindblom. And we asked, you know, kind of what they were feeling about the Laquan McDonald issue and everything that was going on in the city. And their point was, no one asks us our opinion. The boys go to the protests, but my parents don't let me go. The boys go, they tussle with the reporters, they kind of get their voice heard. And I said, listen, if you think that's the last time you're going to be in a situation where a boy gets their voice heard and you don't, or a man and a woman, I said, this is like a lifelong journey, so you better figure out a way to get around it now. So we brought all these girls together from all over the city, and we said, what do you want to do about it? And they said, we want to do a conference where we talk about the stuff that's on our mind. And they were really focused on calling it a young feminist conference. So this year we're having our second one, October 21st at Motorola Mobility at the Merchandise Mart. And they've been wonderful hosts for us. And there's going to be hundreds of girls. I mean, it's really kind of exploded. But the two things they talked about that they really are is really on their mind is, the first is online bullying. This idea that you know, you kind of put yourself out there, you have an opinion, and it's, you get this onslaught of negative feedback. And so Julie DiCario, who is a ESPN reporter who had this experience, is coming to speak to the girls. So, and it was interesting because we encourage our daughters to have a strong opinion, to have a voice, to put themselves out there. But are they prepared to take what comes next, especially when
in this era of social media?
Right. And that is not, you know, I have teenage kids, boys and girls, and this is not a language I'm fluent in. So I got to learn how to be better at it, and this will be really interesting.
How can people get information about the conference?
Yes, so if you go to otschicago.org, OTS Chicago, just Google Off the Sideline Chicago, or even go to BridgetGaynor.com. All the information's there. October 21st, it's free. And it's not just for young girls. It's for young at heart. So a lot of women my age are bringing their daughters. You know, how do you talk about some of this stuff with your daughter in a way that she's hearing her peers talk about it too? So we have, you know, women all the way up to 70, girls starting at about 16. So I really encourage people to come, because this is about taking positive action. It's not about looking in the rearview mirror. And we have an amazing generation coming up, and it's an opportunity to see them really take leadership.
Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, thank you so much for joining me this morning. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Hal Dardick from the Tribune, Sarah Feigenholz, Democratic State Representative, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor. Also want to thank all the folks at Cafe Bionda for the wonderful brunch that they provided this morning. Tony and all the gang out there, 1924 South State Street in Chicago. And I want to thank all of you for listening as well. And now it's time to turn things over to the, not to Dean Richards.
No. Dean is out at Soldier Field right now. He's not playing guard for the Bears.
Well, as I say, the Cafe Beyond, it's their Bears tailgate brunch, but you can actually stomach the food because you don't have to watch the Bears today.
Exactly. Wow. But, he's hosting AIDS Walk, the AIDS run and walk at Soldier Field, but he will be here at 10 o'clock. So they went to the bullpen, and they went for the crafty right-hander to be his setup man. So I'm like Rondo or one of those guys from
the middle reliever.
Rondon, yeah, for the Cubs. So I'm a setup man today.
Okay.
But Dean will be here at 10, and then I'll hopefully stick around with him for a little while, so we'll have some fun.
What do you got planned?
Well, I've got some of the usual craziness. I believe that Dean's got someone coming in for the theater segment for The Rock of Ages, and I think he's also doing his food segment. I'm not sure what exactly is on tap. I'm just here for the first hour, and then after that, I don't care. I'm just breezing.
Well, I'm going to have my own food segment here.
Yeah, this is, I mean, there's nothing like having a steak sandwich at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, Rick.
Yes, yes.
Jay Cutler threw an interception in the end zone on his first drive.
There we go.
Now, that's a game in England, isn't it, Sam?
Yes.
So do they call it a misguided pass?
Sure.
Did he throw a misguided pass?
He took them all the way down the field. On first and goal, he threw a pick in the end zone.
So he took them to the garden, but he wasn't able to get them exactly into the garden, just right near the gates.
Pretty much.
Misguided pass sounds like my social life.
Hi-oh!
Thank you very much.